Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Teaching Through the Screen Instead of On the Screen and features Rebecca Vitelli in an interview with Dr. Petra Kern. Hello, I'm Dr. Petra Kern, the Editor-in-Chief of Imagine. Welcome, Rebecca Vitelli. Thank you for joining me today on this Imagine podcast. Over the past year, the COVID-19 global pandemic has required us to be flexible and adjust how we work with young children and their families. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to explore how your work with young children and their families has directly or indirectly changed as a result of the pandemic. What have you learned and what experience did you have? Rebecca, here are 10 questions for you. My number one question is, where do you work and what is your role?
Sure. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here to discuss and have this rich conversation together. I am a proud preschool teacher. I teach in the Colonial Early Education Program, and it's in the Colonial School District in Newcastle, Delaware. So my classroom, I am a tier 2 classroom. So I have students, it's full inclusion, but I have students that have more intensive disabilities alongside typically developing peers in a full inclusion model. So I am very fortunate to work with a whole team approach. So I have two wonderful paraeducators. I have a team with OT, PT, and speech, and it's a wonderful inclusive environment.
And Rebecca, you are the 2020 Delaware Teacher of the Year.
And I am.
Yes, congratulations to that. And
thank you.
I have actually heard you speaking at the DEC conference last week, and you did an impressive presentation on the 10 lessons you learned through the pandemic and how you work with young children remotely. But what I'm also curious about is I have seen that you have joined now President Joe Biden at his campaign stop. And I was wondering, looking at that picture, what did you advocate for when were speaking with him?
Yeah, so we, again, and it was so funny because it was the type of thing where I got the phone call and my administrator was like, it's not a prank, like this is real, because you know, you're like, who, we're gonna get a call from the president, like what? But it was very exciting. So I got the phone call and they said, you know, that he was coming to talk about his early care and workforce plan and from our school, and that he would be honored to meet me and for me to attend. So it was just so exciting. Of course, it was during COVID, so you know, we, like, there were certain restrictions in place and, you know, masks and all that, the 6 feet, and it was very kind of, you know, like not the, you know, in and out, it had to be just because of the distancing, but we were able to talk about the importance of education and the value of teachers. And it was just really, it was very surreal. And when I wrote him like that thank you note, I really wrote like, to be in this, like for him to be in the space, advocating for the work I do, like in that same space, it was truly surreal and just very, I know it meant a lot to my school. It meant a lot to the families, to our children, to our community. And again, like he values teachers, he values early education. And there's just something really exciting about that.
Yes. That brings me now back to your classroom, asking you, what types of services do you offer for young children and their families, especially right now in that remote world?
Yeah, sure. So we have been in and out, right? So we started the year in full remote, then we came back for 9 days, and then we went back to remote, and now we are actually in person. But we, you know, we have seen a large change, like, you know, we have seen a lot of services being done, and when we are virtual, we try to provide the same opportunities that we would in the classroom in terms of like therapies and sessions. So we do, when we were remote, we did like whole group sessions, but we also did small group learning opportunities as well as one-on-one sessions for those students that may need more intensive instruction or more like repetition and practice of skills. We also did like group therapy. So, you know, what the beautiful thing about my school, and I always say it, is that it is fully it's push-in models. So, you know, our therapists come right into the classroom and work right alongside with us and with all the children to work with our students. And it's great because it allows us to all be on the same page and to really apply that like team model of therapy. So we tried to do the same thing virtually as much as we could as well, which was, you know, it would not just be me like with the student, but it would be me and a speech therapist, me and occupational therapy, occupational and PT working together to provide. And there was something that really was fun and exciting. And again, like that teamwork was still there, even in the virtual world, which was really special. And I think there, when you provide therapy using that like whole team model, like you're servicing the whole child, like with their therapy sessions. And I think that's really great. And it allows us all to be on the same page so that, you know, when our therapists have, you know, so many people on their caseload, but I see what they're working on in PT, I see what they're focusing on in OT, I see what they're focusing on in speech. So then how can I work on all those goals all the time in the classroom? Because, you know, it's not just speech goals, it's a child's goal, you know? So it's, you know, they're not just going to work on those things during speech, OT, and PT time. It's their goal for their educational performance. So, you know, we try to embed and work on that. So we were able to do that pretty successfully online. And obviously in person, we're able to make that happen too. And in addition to like those like therapy sessions that we offered, when we came back into the building, we were also able to provide things like hearing, vision, dental screening. So just things like that we were able to create access and opportunity to was really wonderful. And our school also, we're very big family engagement, opportunities for families to connect. So even virtually, we've still been trying to do some like family events here or there to really, you know, we did the open house, we did kind of like a meet the teacher night, we did a more like social like movie night around like the holidays where families could log on together and watch a film with their school family. We do like kind of spirit days too. So we still, you know, even if we're virtual, try to bring that engagement and that enjoyment piece and that connection with families, because this year it looks different. Like, you know, families can't come into the building because of COVID, but like, how can we still provide those opportunities for them to connect, see their children learning, be involved in it in ways that's outside just, you know, like, oh, here's Zoom school and you're on with us, which is, you know, also great. But, you know, how can we make those opportunities happen in a virtual world? So we've been doing that as well.
That's beautiful. So you created also a virtual community with your families.
Yes.
So do you have a music therapist on your team as well?
So we do not, unfortunately. When I first came to school, like when I first came to this school, we did have like music lessons. Like we had music and the students loved it. And, you know, we kind of have a later start time because we chose, our administration like really pushed for this common planning, the need for it. And so now we all have planning like first thing in the morning, which is great because it's been a great opportunity to collaborate with other educators. It's been a wonderful opportunity to talk with paraprofessionals and really get, you know, what's the plan for the day? What are we working on? What's these activities? What do I need you to do? And that's just been really helpful to get on the same page. But with that later start time, we had to cut the specials component. So now they don't receive those specials, which is, you know, I miss that because I know they loved it, but we also try to embed those things into our classroom every day. And I can honestly say that music is something that we do all day, every day. We love to sing, we love to dance, we love to, you know, get out the instruments. There's some, you know, we have a music center in our classroom, it's always open. I think music is such a important part of the way that children learn and engagement, and it's a beautiful opportunity to make connection too.
That's great. And I saw in one of your previous interviews, you made actually a comment and it said, so even something that just looks like singing, there's so much more going on in terms of talking language, cognitive, physical, and social emotional skills. And that's what we would say as music therapists as well. So can you give me an example what kind of music you do? Especially, I'm curious to know how you did it remotely.
Sure. So we actually start every day with a Brain Smart Start. So what that is it's a uniting activity that gets us, you know, all connected, doing something together, and like kind of we're wiring the brain to be able to and willing to learn. So that connection activity is always a song. So it's a child's job. to pick the song, and even virtual, like, you know, we had the visuals that they could pick, like, should we do Rise and Shine today? Should we do School Family? Should we do La La Song? Like, which one? And they would pick, and then we would all do it together. We still do that practice in the classroom. Probably every month or so, I add an additional song to the choice board. So again, we're constantly introducing new songs, giving them the opportunity to learn something new, but also providing those like familiar songs that they know and love that they can always choose to pick. So we do that every day, whether virtual or in person. We start the day, like our group time, with a song, singing together. It's like our uniting and connecting opportunity that gets us ready to learn, excited. You know, it just, it really, I always say, and my friends know it, like if I have to cut group short, they're like, well, we're not going to miss the song. And I'm like, you know, because that's like the one thing I will keep. If we can't even do the rest of the group, we will unite and connect with our song. I can't miss an opportunity to sing with them. So we start our day with that. But throughout the day, I mean, transitions, you know, when we're trying to move to the next activity, everything's paired with a song and a movement pretty much. It makes it more playful. It makes it more fun. It makes it more exciting. And again, like it really helps like the connecting the motion sometimes with the music. They're getting that multimodal approach to learning. So they're pairing the words with actions, which really helps to increase their understanding. In the classroom too, like when we teach like new concepts, we usually do songs of the week that go with our theme. So that's a great way that we work on vocab. It's a great way that we get that repetition in. And again, in like very playful sing-song ways. One of my other favorite ways that we use music is through I Love You rituals, which those are songs that are specifically designed to have eye contact, touch, and playfulness. And with another person. And of course, we've had to slightly adjust with COVID and make it not so touch-based and more like that playful touch base. But we were able to teach that virtually to families, which was so amazing to be able to kind of like teach our songs to families and then have them do it with their safekeeper while we, you know, are like kind of instructing. But these songs are wonderful opportunities that build those connections among friends, build the connections among teachers and adults, the families and adults. And we also do one of those or every week and just create like another opportunity for children to develop relationships and connections through music. And the I Love You rituals have been some of the ways that I have our students with more significant autism or our students who have a really difficult time connecting through those music, that music and through those songs, which are from the conscious discipline framework. I have seen them gain that eye contact, gain that presence, build that relationship and communication. And so it is something that I really love and really value. And it's something we do every day. And if there's ever like wait time, which, you know, sometimes it happens when you're waiting for buses, you're waiting for this, there's always, I'm like, what I Love You song can we sing? And that's what we do. We had a fire drill and, you know, they have to go outside and they have to wait and sit. And it's hard. It's a new trend. It's a new routine. You know, it's a loud noise. And, you know, when we were sitting outside, I was like, oh, I Love You ritual, can we sing? And they picked one and we all whispered it and did it together and it helped to calm and regulate them in that moment. So we use music all the time. We also, like when we transition in the hallway, it's so funny because when you think of everyone's like, oh, they need, you know, you think like, you know, catch a bubble, hands at side. And our school really embraces like we're singing in the hallway. With transitions, you know, it is an opportunity to sing and be joyful and use that music to help transition. So I think when you enter our school building, or even if you probably attend any Zoom session, I think we do more singing than talking in a lot of the times, but it's great. So
that's wonderful. You make my day, Rebecca. It sounds like you are implementing everything I have written about in my publications for early childhood educators. So it's wonderful that you're applying this actually on a daily basis with your children. It makes me happy. So you basically answered already my next question, which is how have your services changed due to the global pandemic? But what would you say is the major change? What's the lesson you have learned, what you had to change here?
Sure. And I, so The lesson I've learned, I think, has been more of a blessing than anything else. But I think the biggest change was that we were doing school like through a screen with families present full time. And if they weren't present, they had to help at least log their child on. We are preschool. I said that all the time. I think we have seen a lot of like some more success with online learning, because with preschoolers, like they need someone with them to engage in the activity or lesson. It's very difficult for young children to sit unattended or to even like work the technology by themselves. So just naturally, like families know, like, oh, if we're gonna make this work, like someone needs to be present for the most part. And my families have been incredibly wonderful, flexible, and have made that work, which I've been very fortunate and blessed to work with them and make sure that that happens. And it's not just families I've been working with, it's been grandparents, it's been uncles, it's been aunts. And it has just, I think, really shown that, our school family is more than just our fam, like, our four walls of a classroom. It is the child's family. It is, the extended family, and everyone is part of that. And school shouldn't be, just what you do in these, learning is not just a happens from this time to this time. Learning happens all the time with everyone. And it should be a joyous process that involves the entire family. And so I think the biggest change was, of course, we've always had good family involvement. We've always valued families. I tell my families that you are your child's first and most important teacher, and we are there to help support and be on that ride together. But this year, like, they've been in school with us, like the whole time. And what's so great about that is it was a wonderful opportunity to build those relationships, build those connections even stronger, but to also provide family coaching.
Yeah, and this goes right along with the DEC best practice guidelines of family practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think we've always known it, and I think we've done a really great job. But I mean, I never would have thought, like, let me hop on a Zoom call and walk my family through a task analysis of hand washing, or let me show. And now that that's like our mindset, like I was able to meet with the family just the other day about, bathroom visuals and toileting, and I went through everything. Here's the song we sing, here's the social story, here's the schedule, here's the timer, this is what we do, this is. And it's not just a phone call. Like, I'm able to show the visuals, talk through families about it, and it's really opened the doors, I think, for even more successful family involvement. And but it's something that we're not always trained in.
So it sounds like your families, they adjusted well, but one of the biggest barrier everyone talks about is access to technology. How did you solve that in your school district?
Yeah, so we were very fortunate. Our school district was extremely proactive. We are, as a school district, like a one-to-one device model. So like everyone does have, in the elementary and beyond, has access to one at home, like a computer, for schoolwork. But we, like, they work to get that out to families. So if families needed a device, they got that to them. They worked very hard to expand internets and connection. So our district was extremely proactive in getting those resources to families and sending out surveys and providing many different opportunities to pick up these materials, or in a lot of cases, some teachers drove, picked it up for the family and drove it. So we were very, I think, very proactive, and that came from district leadership and being like, we need, if this is going to happen, like, we need to provide these resources to our families who need it. And we did our best. And of course, we did not expect our children to sit all day on a screen. Like, we did two live whole group Zoom sessions a day, and then like children every day were seen in either small group or one-on-one. So like grand total, if they came to everything, it was probably like an hour and a half worth of computer time, but with breaks going on. And the other thing was that what we always say is it depends what's on the screen, right? With us, we're trying to not share our screen so much. It's really like this, like how we're, talking, like face to face. and we're bringing manipulatives, we're bringing toys, we're bringing objects to the screen to make it more purposeful. So it feels very natural. And how we kind of made that happen was, again, our school was very proactive and put like boxes and toolkits together with actual manipulatives and visual supports and sent those to families so that everyone had these tools and access to materials to use. But I think that has been, you know, so key, because I say that all the time. I'm like, yes, like you want to limit screen time. You know, you don't want children to be on screens all day, of course, but also when you think about it, like, it matters what they watch too and what the screen time is looking like, you know, what like the developmentally appropriateness of this. And I think our program, like with the early childhood, like we made it very playful, very hands-on, very connection-based. It was not passive watching videos. So I think that that's something to be mindful too, because I know there's so many early childhood educators that say like, this is the opposite of like what I was trained to do or how I was trained to think. But I do think you need to think about, you know, it is also about quality. Like, what are you putting on the screen? How are you presenting? And that you're providing breaks. You know, we know like, we're not going to have them sit for 7 hours a day on a screen.
Rebecca, what you're saying or what I'm hearing and what also the literature says, it is the interaction and the engagement of the young child on the screen that makes the difference and not just the passive watching or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so funny because I always say like, is it exhausting? Yes. Because I feel like as animated as you are in person, you need to almost kind of like up that like through a screen. So it is tiring work, but it's also, there's something about it where our preschool coach, like kind of what we were recommended coming into it. She was like, teach like you would, like you were in the building, but just yes. You're on a screen, but teach like, and we, I think, embrace that. And it really made all the difference. Cause I think to buy spring teaching, which again, we were doing our best, right? Like spring was like, we knew nothing. We were thrown into it. Here we go. But I think back and like my teaching has truly transformed. And it's because of that piece, because I stopped teaching. Like my videos is like, I stopped teaching like on a screen and I just began teaching through it. Like,
yes.
How are we going to bring that, what I would do in the building, right to them like on a screen? And we found a lot of success with it. I noticed a great like increase in student engagement and involvement, and even families too. So I think that engagement piece is huge, like you said.
Right. So what would you say is the biggest challenge for you during COVID-19?
To navigate all the change. Right? It is. There's a lot of change. There's a lot of stress. It's learning a lot of new things. So there's a lot of oopses along the way. But just, I think it's really important to give yourself grace, to know that like, you've never done this before. No one has ever taught like this before. You know, people have taught online, but they have not taught online during a global pandemic. So that just give yourself grace, be flexible, because it is new, it is different. And it's hard. It's hard on everyone, not just the students, because we know that, you know, all this change is impacting them as well. But it's hard on us to constantly be changing and constantly being trying to model this self-regulation when ourselves sometimes don't feel the most regulated right now. There's a lot going on that it can make us uneasy.
What have been some valuable resources for you?
My colleagues, other educators are like my first go-to for resources. I have to say the Conscious Discipline website has been tremendous, because not only do they have so many free resources for teachers, but also for families. And that, again, in a time where self-regulation and social emotional learning is, I mean, it's always been needed, but it's really critical right now during all this stress and the change. Those tools have been tremendous. So I've used many of those resources as well. I would honestly say I go to YouTube a lot and search for music and songs and like to share. So YouTube songs have been great. I know talking with other educators too, like we say it, I'm like, YouTube is a go-to for those music and that inspire, like for those songs and that playfulness and those movement breaks like through virtual. So we used a lot of YouTube. And then as a school, we're very big on visual supports, especially with being in a setting that has children with a lot of special needs. So Lesson Picks, Board Maker, has been getting a lot of love, a lot of use. There's also just some specific websites that I can always share the links to that like have just amazing visuals for not just, you know, like everyday routines, but like like areas of a house, areas of a room to provide that language. Music, like they break down different parts of the song and include visuals throughout the song. Book, same thing with the props. So I think we've just been using a lot of like websites with visual supports and tools. The ECTA website has also been wonderful. That's where you can check out the Preschool in a Pandemic series, where you can learn from myself, but also amazing, powerful, inspirational other educators from across the nation who are teaching during the pandemic, and you know, just have amazing insight and value to take away. So there's, again, online opens the door to so many resources and opportunities. So I always love exploring new tools and resources online as well. And then to share that out, like our school, we try to compile like lists of these like online resources that we can go to access, because there is so much out there. It's just sometimes it can get overwhelming, right? Like where do I go? What do I look for? But those are some of my key go-tos. And I highly recommend, if you don't start, like to make a list of those resources and to use them often, because, you know, it gets tiring to always reinvent the wheel or always make the visual. And honestly, it probably is out there for you to access in some way. So just use your resources, like lean on your colleagues. There's a lot of great tools out there. And I think people are sharing a lot now as well, because they know no one's done this before. People are trying to create, and I think people are being very compassionate and like sharing and posting their ideas, like what's working, what's not, and that's been really helpful too.
Yes, and I will come back to you to ask you for those resources, and we'll
absolutely
put them in the podcast page.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to share out.
To close out our interview here, Rebecca, can you give us some words of encouragement for our listeners? And you already gave a lot, I want to say, but what's your word of closure?
Oh, okay. So I think my biggest thing would be just that encouragement of like, you've got this. Know that this is really hard. No one has done it before. And we are all actively trying our best. I think, I know it's said all the time, but like, give yourself grace. Cause I know as educators who are in this field, and I know like people who are listening, the therapists, like we put our heart and soul into this job, right? I mean, it's not just a job. It's a calling. We go above and beyond, and everything is personal, because everything, we know how important it is. It's meaningful. We love our students and our families like they are our own. So all of this right now, it's overwhelming, right? Like sometimes you feel like you're like, when you know how we say like kids are carrying that backpack, and what's in their backpack, really, what are they bringing to school? Educators, like we're carrying a lot right now. It is heavy. We are tired. It has been a stressful year and time for everyone, but just know like you are showing up every day. You are giving it your all. Like you have got this, you can do this. And you know, it is okay. Give yourself some grace when things don't, you know, go perfectly according to plan, when the class seems like very chaotic, because in reality, like things are chaotic. Like we are, you know, it's not, but my biggest thing, like, what is it, February? It's not really February in classroom, like when you're coming back into the building, like you're back into like first day of school, September. So like, we kind of reset those expectations, you know, really think about where you are, the kids are, and give yourself grace. Like this year, we are teaching through something we have not done before. Try your best, keep going. We are all very grateful, you know, for everyone's service. And again, I certainly am grateful for my colleagues, because I know I would not be able to get through it without them. So lean on each other, hang in there, and know that like you showing up every day is exactly what the students need. You are in exactly the right place at exactly the right time to make some really powerful and impactful change. So thank you for all you do, and keep it up.
And thank you for sharing your insights, Rebecca. You truly deserve the honor of being the Teacher of the Year in Delaware.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast, produced in 2021.